Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even sitting here.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind. 'Twas the week before Christmas, and there was still news in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. A very sharp exchange at a Senate committee on a bill that would ban sanctuary cities. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes opens the first meeting of the Climate Change Task Force. Representative John Nygren says, yes, 20% drop in the number of opioid prescriptions statewide is a good start, but we still need to pass a New Hope agenda in the spring session. And assembly leaders disagree in Wisconsin Eye's year-end interviews on just how the year went. Wish I was there.
Don't make this racial, because it's not. This is an issue about an individual that's a criminal.
Some policies, regardless of how well-intentioned they are, have unintended racial disparities.
Bill 680 actually will make a definite and an immediate difference. A dental therapist, if it passed tomorrow, will take 5 to 7 years before you will actually have one practicing.
Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, I'm so excited to be chairing Governor Evers' Task Force on Climate Change, and we want to make sure that our work, our good work that's going to come out of this task force, touches all communities equally, and the communities that have traditionally been left behind, we want to make sure that they have a say-so in the conversation. We want to make sure that they are on the positive side of Wisconsin's rebound.
We're here today to announce the filing of a lawsuit to block submission of the Constitutional Victims' Rights Amendment to the voters in the April 2020 election.
We've seen between 20% and 30% reduction in prescribing of opioids in Wisconsin since we implemented the prescription drug monitoring program.
That's significant.
It's huge.
You know, it was really a good year. As I think back a year ago now, most people were trying to figure out how the Capitol would work. Would they have a budget that went until the snow flew? Would they be able to find consensus? Would it all be arguing? But in the end, Governor Evers deserved credit that he signed a conservative budget. You know, some of the things he did with his vetoes, I wasn't a big fan of, but that's his right under the Constitution. You know, we still have more work to do in the spring of 2020 before we finish in February, but I think we've had a really good start.
I think it was about 12 hours or something after the governor was elected that the speaker made it pretty clear that, you know, say screw you to the voters and undermine the democratically elected governor by reducing his powers before he and the attorney general were even sworn in. Reviewing my floor speech from that night, I said the most negative consequence a fallout of today's action would be on the toxic effect on bipartisanship. I think, unfortunately, it set the tone for the session with the governor.
The dispute over 234,000 movers, people who voted at one address and then federal records showed they may have moved, just got more interesting last week, J.R. Let's do it from a chronological standpoint. Yep. Last Friday, the Ozaukee County Judge Paul Malloy ordered the Election Commission to remove those 234,000 names of alleged movers. Now, let's go back. After Republicans took control in 2011, they passed a bill saying you didn't have to sue state government in Dane County. You could sue anywhere you want. That was on Friday. On Monday, the Elections Commission deadlocked 3-3 on removing those names. Before we hear from the Elections Commission, the actual back and forth, your thoughts on the process so far?
Okay, well, keep in mind that under state law, if they suspect that you've moved, the system called ERIC, they send you a letter saying, hey, have you moved?
Yes.
If you have, you need to re-register a different address. There were 234,000 letters sent out in October. What the lawsuit argues is that you, after 30 days, if you haven't responded, you must be taken off the rolls. They say the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, which filed a lawsuit on behalf of some citizens, says that's what the law says. The Elections Commission, however, previously this year, it said, no, we're going to give those people who don't respond until April, I think, of 2021
yes.
to respond. If they haven't responded by then we'll pull them off the rolls. Well, what's April 2021? It's after the spring election where we have a presidential primary. We have a state Supreme Court race, and then in November, we're the eye of the storm of the presidential race in Wisconsin.
Right. So let's take a look at the back and forth, the disagreements between two members of the Election Commission, in which one of them, a Republican designee, said Republicans have no faith in the commission on which he serves. Please.
I haven't seen an order from a judge I haven't seen a transcript. And for me to say, based on a newspaper article, that the Eric findings are reliable in light of our years of experience to the contrary is absurd.
I can tell you right now there is not confidence from the Republican point of view in this Wisconsin Election Commission. And I think we need to go ahead and follow the orders of the judge. And as I understand it, to deactivate it takes 10 seconds, and to reactivate it takes another 10 seconds.
All of us should respect those people that are properly registered and not treat them as if they're some piece of dirt. And these are constitutional matters. We do not have the right to impede someone's right to vote if they're properly registered.
I think this is a very clear motion. We're not infringing on anybody's constitutional rights.
Then Attorney General Josh Call appealed the Ozaukee County Court decision before the Court of Appeals, and fill me in on what order they issued, JR.
So he went to the 4th District Court of Appeals based in Madison, because again, that state law of 2011, they give the state the option to go elsewhere on an appeal versus the district that encompasses the circuit court where this lawsuit was filed.
Yes.
Call asked the 4th District, make a decision on a stay now without further input, essentially. The court said no. We're going to give those who sued challenging the election commission decision until Monday, this coming Monday, to weigh in. After they weigh in, we'll then make a decision. However, we are expediting this case. They're going to make a quicker than normal decision, but they're not going as fast as the AG wants them to.
Okay, but now the final part of this news was that the League of Women Voters filed in federal court, which, and we all know how seriously federal courts take these voting rights issues. So, Does that have the effect of moving it out of the Court of Appeals?
Not yet. What they're asking the federal court is they're saying, look, there wasn't adequate warning in these letters of the consequence of not acting sooner. Therefore, it violates the rights of these people to have them pull off the rolls. Look, and then we got an update from the Elections Commission this week that of those 234,000 letters sent out, about 2,300 actually responded, said, no, you know, I'm here, I'm good, wherever I'm at. The rest basically either didn't respond or the letters were kicked back as undeliverable.
Yes.
However, the commission on its own is able to identify people who it believes have re-registered elsewhere or are good to go, essentially. So you're talking about 212,000 people right now who could be delisted, depending on what happens with this case. Now, under Wisconsin law, we have senior registration. So you can show up at the polls as long as you have the right information and re-register.
Proof of address.
Here are a couple of catches on that, what worries the Democrats. One, I believe if you have a current driver's license with your current address on it, that is sufficient. But if you move, you don't have to get a new driver's license. You can keep the same license with the old address on it. Yep. That means you need to have a utility bill, mortgage, lease to show that your new address.
Yeah.
If you show up and you've moved and have an old address on your ID, you must then go home, get that information, and come back. The worry among Democrats is those folks who were pulled off and didn't know about it or didn't get the letter, whatever, or moved, that they will just basically give up and say, okay, I'm going home.
Yep.
Or there are longer lines at those polling sites, which tend to be in urban areas for the people who would be impacted. That would then create longer waits for people who are registered, but they have to wait for these people to get re-registered while it causes slowdowns.
I understand, but this is the third time in a row that we've had to talk about this because it's so important. President Trump won Wisconsin by less than 23,000 votes.
That is the thing. And Republicans argue that you're leaving the voter rolls open to fraud because you have people in there who shouldn't be there and that this is about cleaning things up. So the courts will end up deciding in the end whether it's a state Supreme Court or it's going to be a federal court, what's going to happen with this.
Okay, thanks. New subject. The State Department of Administration Secretary Joel Brennan, we're going to do this one also from a chronological standpoint because we'll get to your interview yesterday with the governor. He wrote a letter to Foxconn saying Foxconn now plans at the Mount Pleasant campus is materially different in a nature, type, cost, size, and job creation terms. Ergo, we must renegotiate the 2017 contract for Foxconn to then qualify for the tax credits, which was up to $3 billion with a B.
From the state alone, yes.
From the state alone. Thank you. And that drew this response from a senior Foxconn executive. We're getting to the back and forth here, the sniping. While Foxconn invests millions of dollars into Wisconsin and hires job seekers, these efforts are being impeded by the Evers administration's red herrings over the material terms of the contract. And just finally, state auditors again came out and said, we're not sure, WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corp., that you have cleared up the question about whether out-of-state Foxconn workers who may be working on the Wisconsin project may still qualify for tax credits. Now, we'll get to your interview. We'll get to your interview with Governor Evers. But first here, what Speaker Voss told me about, and by the way, the Foxconn complex is in Speaker Voss's district, told us yesterday about he doesn't much care what's produced at that at campus as long as there are jobs and that factory gets turned on. Please.
I don't care if they make Gen 10 or Gen 6 or Gen 22, as long as they employ the people they promised and they put the money into the buildings that they guaranteed they would to be able to pay off the bonds. I'm going to take Governor Evers at his word. He said he supports Foxconn. He wants him to succeed. I don't think they're trying to look for a loophole to cancel the contract, and I hope that they won't.
So you patiently waited through my narrative. Now it's your turn. You had the you're in an interview with the governor yesterday. What did he say on Foxconn?
He basically said he's not necessarily looking to lower the subsidy for Foxconn. He wants to make sure there's transparency and the contract is basically right-sized. And this is, Evers has been saying for a while publicly that he thought there need be changes because Foxconn has changed what it's doing. The original vision of Foxconn, when the president called it the eighth wonder of the world, was a Generation 10.5 facility. What that means is producing these thin glass screens, LCD screens, the size of a garage door. Now they're talking about a Generation 6 facility. That means still screens, but like big screen TVs, like computer monitors, like those kinds of things. We're not talking like big giant screens anymore. It's a much different production process, much less labor intensive. So Evers been saying, hey, that's different, all right? So the question becomes, is that different enough that it violates the contract? So what Evers is now saying, his administration, is that's not what you said you're going to do. We signed this contract.
Right.
Therefore, you're not eligible for credits. Why that's important? Foxconn missed the first round of credits for job creation.
A year ago.
Because it created, I think, 113 certified jobs.
Right.
It needed 260 at a minimum to qualify. As of December 31st, 2019, it has to have 520 qualified jobs. Remember, qualified is the important thing.
Qualified and verified.
That's right, because they may have created 500-some jobs, but not the ones that count toward this metric, which is paying between $30,000 and $100,000 with benefits available and other sustainers, okay? Foxconn says, hey, we've created that many jobs, we're good to go. If the state's saying you're not meeting the contract, it's not get those job credits, no matter how many jobs it created. Right?
Right.
Then there are also capital investment credits for how much is spent on the buildings. So there's a lot of money at stake right now. We'll see what happens. It could end up in court, decide who's right eventually, unless they reach some kind of deal to renegotiate this.
Yeah, okay, and that's where I want to go next. Let's throw it forward into 2020. Foxconn and the state could negotiate a new deal, but the Foxconn has to notify the state either it created X amount of jobs and is claiming X credits by the end of April. Mm-hmm. So that's where it goes next. And do you think the Brennan versus the Foxconn executive was just kind of posturing here?
I don't know, because I'm not a lawyer. I can't tell you what the contract means. I mean, there are people who pay a lot more than I am disagreeing right now about the contract and whether they've met the requirements of it.
Right.
Let's pull back and look at Foxconn big picture, okay? There are more forces at play with this project than just a dispute between the Evers administration and a company about whether they've met the contract. There is a trade war going on with China. There are tariffs. There is a presidential election coming up this fall in which the person, Donald Trump, who was instrumental in bringing Foxconn to Wisconsin, is on the ballot. If Trump isn't in the White House come January of 2021, there may not be the same incentive to have a Foxconn plant in Wisconsin. Now, I've gotten conflicting opinions from people, and I've asked about this, about whether Foxconn just walk away from what it's done. But in the grand scheme of a global, I think, multi-billion-dollar company, or at least multi-billion-dollar market, what they're doing, this is a small investment. So there's lots at stake here, lots of forces outside of Evers' control that could dictate what happens.
Meanwhile, the state government, the Department of Transportation is changing roads, and local governments have kind of, I don't want to say sold out, but they've committed hundreds of millions of dollars to this
backers site. Of this the state contract always point out that there are clawbacks, there are protections, that unless they create the jobs and make the investment, the state doesn't pay the credits. It's a different story for the local governments who've done a different kind of deal. They're the ones in the most difficult situation. There are lots of questions going forward, but no matter what happens, you know, I guess when I'm watching the next 12 months, it could be key in the Foxconn future of what happens with those 12 months and whether it's still here in Wisconsin in 10 years.
Right. Okay. New topic. The state budget that was adopted in July budgeted 2% raises for state employees, but there are some nuances that we're going to talk about. The 2% raises were approved this week by Joint Committee on
Employment Relations.
Employment Relations. Thank you. But let's talk about, there was a negotiated contract, the Evers administration and the state troopers, that the troopers said we're way behind. We had a training class of 32, only 16 finished. So we deserve what amounted to 20% pay raises. So that back and forth was, it was interesting. You have Speaker Voss, Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, talk about why the troopers, bottom line, did not get any pay raise. So let's hear that back and forth, please.
How many people are covered under the troopers contract?
The
350-ish?
368, I believe, is the number I saw on the snapshot that we used to figure out the funding.
Okay, and the total cost of the contract that was negotiated is about $5 million? For 368 people, $5 million, that's an average of around a $14,000 increase per trooper. I think many of us on the committee, the last time that we adopted a contract, gave an increase that was close to 9% or something around there, right?
I believe it was 6.1%.
I think that there's just concerns that an increase of over 20% in one cycle probably is a little richer than the state of Wisconsin wants to afford.
It's difficult on this day. There is a comprehensive and I think a fair package that has been negotiated that the administration is bringing forward, and colleagues on this committee in the majority have left behind the Wisconsin State Troopers. And in a time that we are quick to lift up law enforcement and to praise them as heroes, and you have our back in this building, that we don't have your back.
Just a P.S. on the debate over the state trooper pay. I mean, they didn't get the votes of the committee last week didn't give them anything. Mm-hmm. But Speaker Voss, as we heard, said if you come back with this with pay raises, something in the
high single digits.
So, okay, I just found that very interesting. Any P.S.s on the troopers?
The troopers in 2015, then Governor Walker negotiated a 70% increase for them. They got 6 eventually. Look, the troopers told me that even with the 21.3% boost, with the lift, we call it, for this contract, they would still be behind a number of law enforcement agencies in Wisconsin for starting pay and for top pay. So they're saying this is part of the retention effort, that they're not keeping troopers because troopers graduate from the academy, work a little bit, and they go, oh, I could go make more in Fond du Lac County or Dane County or wherever, right. And they get picked off by local law enforcement and say, hey, this guy's trained or gal's trained.
Yeah.
I can grab him or her, bring them on staff, and we're good to go. So it's a challenge for recruitment.
Yeah, I just found it very interesting that that official representing the trooper said we had a training class of 32, 16 graduated.
But like Voss said, people don't get 20% raises in the private sector.
That's true. Okay. But now let's come back to another part of that committee debate. Governor Evers wanted state government to pay a minimum wage of $15 an hour by the start of 2021. Republicans didn't go along with that.
No.
Any PS on that?
No surprise. I think it was, 1,000, 2,000 people would have been impacted at the end of the Congress?
Well, only like 400 at the UW-Madison when I asked
something
for the
like
number.
That.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, no surprise. I mean, this is a Democratic priority of the $15 minimum wage, and Republicans weren't going along with it.
Right. Okay, fourth topic. The Wisconsin Policy Forum pointed out that property tax levies for schools is going up 4.5%, which is the biggest increase in 10 years. The crediting here the Policy Forum, schools will levy $5.21 billion in property taxes. As I said, the biggest increase in 10 years. School levies, the one-year increase, $224 million. partly because of passage of local building referendums. Property taxes went up the most in Madison, $22.1 million, 11.6 in Milwaukee at MPS, where, according to the Policy Forum, state aid is going down. Now, JR, the context of this, they're not only raising your property taxes and mine, but this is in addition to the $179 per pupil increase in the first year of the budget, $179 the second year. Mm-hmm. So now some people say, if you look at the Charles Franklin polls, there's big support for K-12 schools. Mm-hmm. But so now you have a double whammy of state aid increasing and property taxes increasing.
And don't forget the piece of it. One big piece of this is the the referendums that approved that taxpayers have increased their own taxes. They put money into schools. There is a, I believe, there's going to be a big referendum for Milwaukee in the spring election.
There'd like to be one. It hasn't been approved yet.
Sure. I think it's close to it. Hasn't been yet. Madison expecting a big one as well. So there is a thirst for the money. The question is, will it be approved? And when that money, if is approved, it adds to the overall tax bill. Plus, too, this is the first time they've relaxed those caps per pupil. Remember, per pupil is how much state aid, how much tax money you get, property tax money you get. The more you get in property taxes, or more you get in state aid, the less you have to fill that cap with property taxes. So that's why that's important.
Yeah,
that was important.
Eased. And I went to the Fiscal Bureau numbers, you know, to the wonk in me. Total net property tax levy this December, payable next year, $11.5 billion. K-12 schools, about half of that. Mm-hmm. And I just got my tax bill, which went up 6%. How'd you do?
A few hundred dollars, not sure that I figured the percentage yet.
Oh, mine went up more than yours. Okay, but my school district did pass a referendum. Okay, very important vote in the U.S. House on impeachment. Just for the record, our four Republicans voted against impeachment. Three Democrats voted to impeach the president. Any thoughts on that?
Ron Kine was the one person we were watching, a Democrat from Western Wisconsin. Republicans have been looking at that seat going, we're going to go after Ron Kine 2020 because Trump won the district in 2016 by 4.5 percentage points. Kine voted for impeachment, and Republicans see that, oh, we're going to go after Ron, this is going to be bad for Ron Kine. Charles Franklin directs the Marquette University Law School poll, put out some interesting numbers. If you look at the Marquette polls over all of 2017 through 19, Donald Trump in Western, in the third district by itself, is basically upside down. Which I mean that more people disapprove of his job performance than approve of his job performance. Look at the polls this fall, October through December. People opposed impeaching and removing the president, but not by that much, by like 5 or 4 or 5, 6 points, something like that. Where I bring that up is, yeah, Trump won that district. What remains to be seen is that vote to impeach the president enough to put him in any trouble? And two, can Republicans find a candidate who can actually put Kine into trouble? The only announced candidate so far who was registered with the state to run against him is an anti-Trump Republican. That's not going to go very far, right, in the base we have right now.
That's right.
There is not a named candidate right now who's got run for office before, who can write a big check, who I know of, who's going to run. So without a quality candidate, Republicans will struggle to beat Ron Kind. Now, one theory I've heard this week is that this impeachment vote may trigger an emotional response from somebody, say, okay, I'm going to get in now. But who's that person? Dan Kopanky ran against Kine in 2010, one of the Kine's closest races in his two decades.
He's lining up to run against Senator Schilling.
Again?
Yep.
Yes. Pat Teston, freshman lawmaker Republican. He says he's going to run for election to the state Senate. He's got $200,000 plus in the state Senate account, so he seems geared toward the state Senate. There isn't somebody who stood out as a likely candidate against Ron Kine, and without that, I mean, that's what I'm watching. Do you see a quality candidate challenge Ron Kine the next few months?
But after the House Intelligence Committee made its report to Judiciary, Kine had kind of signaled he was going to vote for impeachment.
This wasn't a shock.
Right.
But now he's on record. He pulled the trigger. Now there's something more concrete to go after about.
Right. Okay. Time for your stock picks. Rising.
So you're both budget wonks. Let's not get too excited just yet. All right. Corporate tax collections, however, the first 5 months of the year, up 56.7%.
Okay.
Department of Revenue puts out a report every month. How this month went, how we're going so far in the fiscal year. Why that's notable is the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, the nonpartisan budget arm legislature, predicted a 14% drop in corporate tax collections for this current fiscal year. Just something to watch because in January we'll get new revenue numbers, right?
That's true.
This is not a bad sign for those revenue numbers. The caveat is December is a big month for corporate tax collections, so Those 5 months were through November. This month is giving a better picture of what's going on. It could be a good sign for the state. If there's a good sign for the state, there's always temptation in election year to either spend it or send it back.
Yep.
So watch that debate about either new initiatives or tax credits, breaks, whatever, if in January, sometime mid-January, we've seen revenue numbers from the LFB.
Okay, but I'm going to go co-wonk on you. You've talked about corporate taxes over the first 5 months of the year. Did you remember that bottom line? All GPR taxes up 7%.
That's pretty healthy, too. That's,
okay, so corporate taxes up 56% with a
56.
Caveat. 56, first 5 months of the fiscal year. Overall GPR taxes 7%. Okay, I'm done.
One more quick thing. Part of what drove, we saw a big bump in the previous fiscal year because of the 2017 tax package that Congress passed that changed. People were moving things around to take advantage of those provisions. And two, we used to see a lot of partnerships where corporations would send their profits to the shareholders and they reported their individual income taxes. It's now, in some cases, more advantageous to report it as a corporation. So that's driving some of this.
Right.
The question is, how much fuel is there left in that tank to keep that drive going?
Okay. Mixed.
So homelessness initiatives. I've seen a lot of fights in the Capitol in my time, Steve. I've never seen a governor try to force joint finance to meet.
Hold the 1310 meeting.
So this is a first. Let's see the background. So there was an initiative under former Governor Scott Walker, chaired by his Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, to address homelessness. The council produced a package of proposals at the end of last year, I believe. Governor Evers, as a gesture of goodwill, included those proposals in his budget.
Yes.
Republicans took them out and said, no, we're going to do it in separate legislation. We're going to keep the money, however, in the appropriation that joint finance oversees that it can then release once this thing is done.
Yep.
That package passed the Assembly overwhelmingly and easily. The Senate, however, has become a roadblock. Scott Fitzgerald said about a month or two ago, there's a concern about the price tag. And depending on how you look at it, it's like $7.3, $7.5 million. So with that legislation hung up, Evers said, okay, joint finance, please release this money. We'll accomplish the same goals, but through my agencies, not through that legislation. Finance ignored the request. So he sent a directive saying that you shall meet under this law.
I've never seen that either in my decades in the Capitol.
Now, joint finance said, yeah, you can't force us to meet. That's nice that law says, but unless we consent, we're not going to meet. Democrats in the committee, which is controlled 12-4 by Republicans, showed up anyway on Thursday, had this kind of hearing
theater
where a couple people from DOA testified about the package.
Yep.
What a great thing it would be if they did this.
Yep.
I'll go away.
Okay.
The question is, what's going to happen next? Can the Senate be persuaded, the Republicans in the Senate be persuaded to pass that package?
I bet they are.
Can Governor Evers find a new way to do this? What I think is also remarkable for a kind of a in-the-weeds, inside-baseball thing is this is a new approach from the governor. He has struggled to get the legislature to do what he wants it to do. He's going to try more of these type tactics to try and put it in a difficult position of like, this is a politically popular thing. It's winter in Wisconsin. We have a homeless problem. You guys should be acting and make them react to things like this. It's something to watch because he wasn't successful in the first year of his term of bending them to his will. The special session on guns didn't go anywhere. Will stuff like this, is this going to be like the new bully pulpit for
And I think the federal government reported today a 1.6 increase in homelessness across the nation. Anyway, Faulding, you got a minute.
Stash Grzynski, a late breaking story.
Representative Stash Grzynski, first term Democrat from Green Bay. Excuse me.
There was a complaint filed against him for sexual harassment, according to what Gordon Hintz announced late Thursday afternoon, that there was an after-hours event in which he made inappropriate comments to some staffer, produced a complaint. It was then verified. Hintz called on Stash to resign, said he's being stripped of his committee assignments, no longer caucus with Democrats. Grzynski then put out a statement saying that he basically had too much to drink, made a terrible mistake, said inappropriate things, but his focus is on fixing what, quote, I've broken and how he can continue to serve the constituents of the 90th Assembly District. Now, this is the second time in 2 years Dems have dealt with a member being accused of sexual harassment. The last is Josh Zepnick in 2017.
He's still out of a job. I checked with him.
2011, 2015, reports that he had kissed women against their will, or consent, at Democratic Party events. Same thing happened. Stripped of his committee assignments, barred from caucus, Kent said resign. Zepnick didn't, ran for re-election, lost in a primary.
Right.
Now, for Grzynski, go back and forth, Bill Cramer, Republican, two separate things. Accused of harassing a staffer on a fundraising trip, separately accused of groping a staffer at a political event. The first one produced a complaint. Second one, criminal charges. He was stripped of his post as majority leader. Didn't run for election.
Speaker pro tem.
Okay. Now with this, with Grzynski, can he keep in office? Well, now until the end of the year?
Okay, the resignation is his decision, but he no longer has committee assignments. He's no longer allowed to caucus with Democrats. So future uncertain, bottom line.
Think of the Me Too environment that we're in. If he decided to run again, how would he get through a primary? He's not a viable candidate for a – so like if Dave Hansen right now, the state senator in Green Bay, hasn't said publicly what he wants to do,
right.
Grzynski was thought of as a logical candidate to run if Dave didn't. If Dave doesn't run, he's not a viable candidate for that seat in a contested race. It's very, very likely he's got much of a career right now. Future in politics in Wisconsin.
Right. Very future uncertain. Okay, two announcements. We'll soon be posting our year in review, the best stories of 2019. And the other is you and I will be back. We're going to have a week or so off with our families, and we'll be back January 10. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 20th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.